We look at all of the areas that we believe fiat broke, and these are areas that require hard work and real long-term investment. This is food, this is education, this is health and wellness, this is city infrastructure. These are areas where you make large investments and you have to do the hard work, but you might not see the results for years, if not decades. The game theory suggests that the longer the business lasts, the more Bitcoin you'll have. And so if we do think of this as a Bitcoin maximization function, right, you want to last as long as possible, and you'll be able to accumulate as much Bitcoin as you can that you can then reallocate into growing the team.
Welcome to the Business Bitcoinization Show, the show dedicated to helping you enrich your life and grow your business with Bitcoin, the hardest money on planet Earth. I'm your host, Josh Friedemann, and our guest today is Lucas Bazemore of Township Ventures. Township Ventures purchases companies, increases their operational capacity, and puts them on a Bitcoin standard. We're going to get to our interview with Lucas right after this. Business owners, unlock the benefits Bitcoin has to offer your business with a Bitcoin for Business Quick Start Guide. This 27-page guide highlights the 6 ways you can grow your business with Bitcoin. Check it out in the show notes. Lucas, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here, Josh. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat.
Absolutely. So I like to start off every single interview with a few questions that help us to get to know you a little bit better and give us some insight for our own lives. So you ready for these?
Absolutely.
Question number one is this: when and how did you first learn about Bitcoin?
Yeah, as most people say, I learned about it actually in 2014, was just doing the gambling thing and didn't realize what I was doing, you know, trying to do the get rich quick. But then really one of my partners at my company, Darian, I have to give all the shout out to him because he beat us over the head about this Bitcoin thing. And so it wasn't about 2019 that things really clicked and we went all in. And I'll say this so for the audience to know, I'm 150% allocated to Bitcoin right now. So short fiat, long Bitcoin. I'll leave it there.
Any recommendations, or would you recommend people don't go extra long Bitcoin, or are there ways to do it in a way that actually kind of makes sense and is not just potentially throwing your life down the drain?
Absolutely. No. I'll clarify that one. I'm not a financial advisor by any sort. So you have to make the decision that's best for you and your family based upon your current financial situation. So the only reason why I can do that is because I have the I'm blessed to be in that position to take on that type of position. Whereas, you know, 2 or 3 years ago wasn't even close. I wouldn't have even considered it. So it's only as I've learned more and had more levers an opportunity to do something like that. So obviously, you know, need to make the best decision for you based upon your risk tolerance and your understanding of Bitcoin and money, et cetera.
Question number two, what's an insight or fact about Bitcoin that you wish everyone understood?
Yeah, I'll say two things, if it's okay. The first one is, as some of your other guests have mentioned this, and I think it really is important, is that Bitcoin is not the ends. Bitcoin is a means to an end. Bitcoin is now the best money that exists. And so we need to be stewards of that money as we allocate it in our lives and where we put that for our friends, our family, our communities. And so that, I think, is something to remember. Now, that transition happens as you've accumulated more and you learn more, which leads me to the second point that I think I wish people kind of already understood it now, which is Bitcoin has unequivocally won. Bitcoin will be the world reserve currency, and we will have hyper-Bitcoinization in the next 15 years. The writing is on the wall. I mean, I think you might have recently seen the European Central Bank just came out and said, Bitcoin's going to go hit $1 million a coin. You know, it undermines government's ability to control people. It gives people sovereignty. That's why we need to ban it. It's like we're living in a parody of reason at this point. So the writing's on the wall. And I think that Bitcoin will have an impact on society in a magnitude that will be as big, if not bigger, than the internet itself in terms of what it will affect. So there is this, you know, seriousness of what's to come that I wish people kind of just knew, but it's okay. It happens with time.
It was that the same ECB report where they were saying that people who don't hold Bitcoin or are latecomers will be impoverished if Bitcoin is successful? Was that the same
exactly.
thing?
Exactly. It was the exact same report. And it's hilarious, right? They are literally the best advocates for why you should buy Bitcoin. I wish more people read the report.
It's crazy because at that point, they're basically saying, if you don't have this thing, then you're done for, which is them saying that it's going to be the thing that wins. Once again, yeah, if everyone could read the report, and you hardly need to read between the lines, but just see what they're saying, all of a sudden it should become so much clearer to people. And yet some people, for whatever reason, are still dragging their feet.
It's okay. It's I'll shout out one of my partners, Darian. He just says there is this kind of weird paradigm where as price appreciates and you get it to break people's expectations of reality, it forces people to question what it is that they know. So, you know, things take time. We try to educate as much as we can for those that aren't there. But you're right. You can read the report and it's literally the government saying it. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you anymore at this point.
Sure. So question number three is, what is a Bitcoin resource that you recommend to other people?
I really like video content. I will say I've listened to a lot of Matthew Kratter with Bitcoin University. I think he's got basically a video on every single topic when it comes to the fundamentals of Bitcoin. So I would personally recommend really getting an understanding of the fundamentals, because it is something that has never existed before and really does break the paradigms of things that you've known. So you kind of have to study it from first principles. And I think he does a really good job. So I tend to send people there.
I recommend him all the time, especially to people who are skeptical and think that, you know, maybe on a YouTube comment, they'll, you know, throw in some jab and try to undermine Bitcoin. It's just like, hey, go take a look at this guy. I could send them to specific videos because he addresses almost every question that people have connected to FUD. But at the end of the day, like, go check it out for yourself. See what's out there. All the questions that people think they have that are in their minds are like checkmates against Bitcoin are all easily answered. And his is probably one of the best places to go for that. So I appreciate that that resource. Question number four, beyond Bitcoin, what is a resource, tool, or idea that's been helpful to you or your work recently?
Absolutely. So I'm a big book reader. I love trying to find what I call cornerstone books, books that have distilled ideas in an area that I think are, of course, pertinent to me, but I can go back to over and over and over again. So right now, what I'm reading that I recommend is I love $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozy when it comes to thinking about sales and value perception and niching down. I'm also reading Actionable Gamification by Yu-Kai Chu, the ideas of how do you design systems around motivating factors for people, and how can you build not just games, but businesses that drive towards win states like games do, that also deliver business outcomes. And then the last one is Pitch Anything by Oren Claff. When you're a business owner, right, you're constantly selling. Whether you know it or not, you're selling to your customers, you're selling to your team, you're selling to investors, you're selling to everybody. And so understanding the nature of what pitches are and how he does a great job of breaking down the biological components of how we actually process information and how to get past a lot of these like fear signals that we have when we're learning something new. So he really does a great job of that one. So those would be the three the books that I would recommend as kind of resources or tools that I'm using in my business.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you sharing those resources. Now we have our final, what we call our arbitrary but insightful question, and it's this. As a general life principle, is it better to ask why or why not?
I've thought a lot about this one. It really was almost a stumper, but I'll say this. As an entrepreneur at heart, my DNA has always been in the why not category. The idea of spending time, money, energy to build something that may fail was always still worth it if the size of the opportunity was big enough. Now, I've really been shifting into more of the why camp, especially as I'm taking and transitioning more into the role of my personal life, husband, potentially fatherhood, or as I've adopted Bitcoin mentality. And now, again, as I mentioned, being a steward of money, you kind of have to ask yourself, okay, if the default is do nothing, right? And I can hold on to that and save, I really have to ask myself, why would I do something and output that expenditure and capital. And for me, that comes down to really asking myself, what's my purpose? Like, why am I doing what it is that I'm doing? Why am I spending time with these people or, you know, going to these activities, etc.? And so I look at it definitely more as a questioning of what's important to me moving forward, looking at a long-term time horizon. Whereas before it was always just like, how do I make the next buck? You know, and it's like, that's no longer the case anymore.
If you were hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth. Wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out: Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at veluscommerce. Let's make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. Well, Lucas, we're here today to talk about Township Ventures. I happen to run across you guys. I love what you're doing, but instead of me spilling the beans, could you just share about Township Ventures and maybe what led you to getting this set up in the first place?
At the core of our team, we believe that fulfillment is the most important thing in life. And we create that fulfillment by putting people first and designing for people in everything that we do. Township Ventures itself is a long-term holding company to buy and build businesses to last generations and ideally fix what fiat broke. Mm. And so we take this idea of creating fulfillment through human-centric design, applying Bitcoin as the lens with which we look at everything, which I'll touch on a little bit more later, but ultimately to build not just wealth or generational wealth, but what we believe is internally is true generational wealth, where you're actually building fulfillment for yourself, for your family, for your community, for your team, and you are taking the ultra long-term mindset. Mm-hmm. So how we came to that is that our team is a collection of engineers and entrepreneurs and even physicists, and we looked at So in our lives, we've had experience with healthcare, manufacturing, services, lots of different industries. And we were all in kind of leadership roles in those organizations that we participated in. And what we found out was there's really kind of three trends that are going on at the moment that steered us into this direction where there's an opportunity window to create this new generational wealth that we're trying to lay the framework and the blueprint for with Township Ventures. And those three were, first, you have the aging demographic of older individuals that have businesses that are for sale. Mm-hmm. So that silver tsunami, as people like to say. And so there's an opportunity of businesses that are coming onto the market that are trying to be offloaded that don't have succession planning. The second is, of course, Bitcoin itself, right? Hyperinflation around the corner in many different domains, and Bitcoin being that opportunity to bring it into the local communities that are there. And then the third is actually AI technology, which I know it's kind of a, AI again, but there's a very real, what we believe here is that more is no longer what's being requested. There is now going to be an infinite amount of more. What matters is getting back to quality. And so at the heart of what we really are thinking about is quality in what we do, quality in the decision making, quality in the people, quality in the business, quality of how we allocate Bitcoin, right? Those three kind of trends give us this window of opportunity to really leverage the traditional financial world that is still using fiat, put Bitcoin on the company's balance sheets. And actually, I had a great conversation with somebody where he'd said, it's not just about putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet. It's actually about turning the balance sheet into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And what are all the implications that comes with, which I can touch on a little bit more later. But then going full circle, once you're there, you've acquired the business, put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. How do you build that business? How do you do the hard work of just doing really good business and making high quality decisions? And what we try to do is look at everything through that Bitcoin lens, through that quality lens of what are those implications, right? Mm-hmm. How do you think about your customers? How do you think about your team? How do you think about capital allocation? How do you think about kind of the whole nine yards? And it sounds like a lot, but when you kind of slow down and you start thinking on at least 4-year cycles with mm-hmm. Bitcoin, right? Not just, next quarter, but even at that time frame, you really start to shift your priority to long-term sustainability. And so that's one of our core metrics is we're constantly measuring is what we're doing right now sustainable for the long term. And if we're having trouble answering that question, we need to kind of slow down and try to find that answer. And now that might mean go out, try things, run against the walls, test and validate, still using kind of that agile entrepreneurship mentality, but in low risk, low cost ways that get you more information to make a better decision. So that's a really long-winded answer, but I hope that kind of shares with you kind of how we think and what we're doing here at Township. Yep. And I can go into further.
So Lucas, one of the things you've just mentioned is the idea of kind of a generational perspective and also the focus on quality. And I wanted to, before we get into the idea of turning your balance sheet into Bitcoin, which is very interesting to me and probably sounds outlandish to the average business owner, what is the connection between thinking generationally, thinking about quality and Bitcoin?
Great question. So the entry point that you have to think of is if Bitcoin is the best money, and right now we're in this transitionary period where the Bitcoin hurdle rate is basically 149% compounded annually. So over the last 10 years, Bitcoin has done just that. It's compounded 149% every year. And so you have to ask yourself, okay, if that's the case, then am I going to allocate my money towards something that generates me less than 149%? Mm. That's one way to think about the direct linear kind of correlation. But this also drives us to think about where that long-term side of things is, where when you're allocating capital, now you think about it not just strictly from a dollar perspective, or sorry, not from a sats perspective or a return on capital in nominal money units. We actually get back towards a world where you're thinking about aesthetics, about the longevity of your team, about the quality of your customers. How long can this last? So I'll start with saying you have the hurdle rate that forces you to reconsider your decision making. Then with that hurdle rate, you then have to re-question everything else, which is, am I going to hire this person or am I going to reinvest in my team? Mm-hmm. Am I going to try to get the next customer or am I going to make my customers that I have last longer? And so that immediately forces you to think about, well, actually, it is more valuable, and this is even a traditional business metric, right? We all know customers that you have generate you more cash than trying to go get a new customer, mm-hmm. right? The customer acquisition cost is so much higher. And when you account for the inflation of the customer acquisition costs, it's a no-brainer to invest more in the customers that you have, provide them more value, provide them more services over time. And so when you really think about it there, and we were kind of touching on this earlier, with under a Bitcoin standard, you actually want, if you want your business to last as long as possible, which I think is maybe implicit what most people want, right? Most people are not the type of individual that's building their business to grow it, sell it for, you know, two coins and then go sleep on the beach. Mm-hmm. They do it because they love their business, whatever that may be. And they love their team. They enjoy those motions. And when it makes them money, fantastic, right? But they get to do what they're enjoying on a daily basis. And so if you can build that succession planning into the organization through the Bitcoin lens, you start to think about the customers that are receiving your customers, putting them on a Bitcoin standard, putting your vendors on a Bitcoin standard, because then as the rising tide lifts all boats, your entire supply chain becomes much more reliable over time. And so when you are thinking about the generational mindset, you do have to think about every component with this hurdle rate of 149%. Mm. And I think it's actually going to increase as we accelerate into the transition.
Yeah.
But I'll pause. Does that answer your question? Does that shed some light? I'm curious.
It does. And I guess then the follow-up question then is that why you want to turn your entire balance sheet into Bitcoin as opposed to holding Bitcoin on your balance sheet? Or is there an additional perspective there as well?
Yeah, it's more of a semantic play. But it is the lens of not just trading fiat for Bitcoin, mm-hmm. which we all have to go through. Everybody has to kind of go through that transition of, okay, I understand it. I'm learning about it. I want to put Bitcoin in my company. But there is also the lens to look through exactly that. For example, one of them that I think is really important for most business owners to understand is the implications of a deflationary asset. Mm-hmm. So under a deflationary asset, Let's actually look at it from the converse to start with. In an inflationary world, you don't control your costs. Your costs are basically increasing. And so you are playing a game constantly of raising prices and trying to grow. So inflation forces growth into the system without necessarily caring about if it's sustainable or not. It just simply says, hey, just FYI, costs are going to go up, so hope you're making more money. Otherwise, you're going to get squeezed. And if you flip that around under a deflationary world, what now happens is your top line revenue might actually go down. And so you're now actually chasing a world where you have to become more operationally efficient. And so investments should not, you change your mind from putting your time and attention into how do I grow? And you put it actually more into the camp of how do I become more operationally efficient? So is the business reducing costs over time? Are revenues declining slower than the deflationary pricing pressure? Because we will get to there where your top line revenue might actually decrease in nominal terms, but your purchasing power would have gone up. And so you're going to have to make sure that your revenues are declining slower than the rest. You're also wanting to think about, is the product or service increasing in quality or value to maintain purchasing power or pricing power that you have? So if the product costs right now 100,000 sats, it's like, well, is it still 100,000 sats in 5 years? If it is, then you have to have provided whatever the delta is in terms of service value or product value to the end customer, because the customers themselves are also going to be asking the same question. Well, if I'm paying 100,000 sats now, this product really better last me a long time, because my alternative is I can just hold on to it and not buy the product. So even things like product ossification will become more and more prevalent, which is, I think, one of the other things that I'll kind of touch on when it comes to your product or service, which is how do you make your product or service as absolutely great as it can be? Yep. Niche down who you're serving and make that product or service phenomenal, because your customers are going to ask themselves eventually, hey, wait, this is, you know, 100,000 sats. Why am I continuously spending 100,000 sats? Either the product stays the same and I should be paying you less, or the product is getting better to maintain that pricing power. Mm. So I'll pause there. I can ramble, but...
No, I think that's great. And one of the things that we have this free Bitcoin for Business Quick Start guide that we talk about on the show. And one of the terms I use there. Instead of accepting Bitcoin, I talk about earning Bitcoin because of that very thing where it's like you're going to have to at some point convince people that whatever you're offering, whether it's a service, product, anything else, it is worth a finite piece of the pie, a finite piece of the money. And it changes how you begin to think about what money is and why people are giving it or why you might be giving it to someone else. So I think that's a very interesting point. And I think the more business owners start to think about that, the quicker quality will go up. And then it's like, it's a new thing because business owners have to think about, am I willing to accept less for this product or continually increase the quality so that I can be maintaining my revenue? It's a different, totally different game than what we're used to, but it's a, I think it will be a valuable place when we get to that point. One of the things I wanted to ask you about as well is there are a few key areas you guys have decided to focus on at Township Ventures. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about what those areas are and why you've chosen those.
Perfect segue, because I wanted to touch on what the last piece you said, which was the cost that customer has to pay. And one of the things is the investments that we make in those cost efficiencies. So we look at, in particular at Township, we look at all of the areas that we believe fiat broke. And these are areas that require hard work and real long-term investment. This is food, this is education, this is health and wellness, this is city infrastructure. These are areas where you make large investments and you have to do the hard work, but you might not see the results for years, if not decades. If you think about your health, right? Like, I have to go to the gym and eat right, and I'm not going to see the results tomorrow, right? It could be years before I realize it's like, oh, actually, I increased my lifespan by 5 years, right? Or education. You're investing in yourself or your children or your community, and that takes years. Even if you go into a technical skill trade, it can sometimes be a year, 2 year long process, which in a business environment where everything is measured in quarters, 2 years is 8 quarters. That's an infinite amount of time for the corporate world. So we focus on those particular industries because we believe that those are what fiat broke the most as the incentive for long-term investment completely disintegrated. And that's how you can understand also the importance of investing for that long-term. We right now, for example, in the United States, I think our infrastructure report card was like a D, and now I think it's like, then it was a C, maybe it's a B minus now, but there are estimated trillions of dollars in water infrastructure, in levees, in dams, in bridges, in all sorts of areas that cities have just ignored completely because their budgets are going towards other things that deliver them short-term benefits. And so you really have to ask yourself your litmus test. So I'll give you some of the metrics that we look at. So the first one being the business needs to be financially resilient. That's first and foremost. You're not going to be able to do anything else if you're not actually, you know, financially resilient. And that means maintaining good balance sheets. It means generating dollars. That's about 50% of the equation. And I'm using loose relative terms, but the financial resilience is one. The second part is what we call lifelong service. So this is that 30%. And so that's where you're investing into the service, the lifelong component of your customers and of your vendors and of your team. That's about, you know, kind of 30%. And then the last 20% is on the community impact. And that for us is the crux of it, which is, are you actually making where you are geographically located better? And so those areas of food, infrastructure, education, health and wellness, these are things that have a tangible impact on the localities that they are. If you have children that are learning things that are applicable to their geography, right? Somebody in Texas, a kid in Texas might be much more akin to wanting to learn agriculture and oil and gas and cattle farming than somebody out in California that might want to grow up and have a winery, right? So if you can embed the locality into those investments that you're making and think about it from that long-term perspective, you can, what we're attempting to do is, how do we create this horizontal playbook of principles to put into these areas of long-term investment where other people can then also go and replicate it. Because we're not going to do everything, right? Those are areas that we want to have an impact in, but that needs to happen globally. The entire world has been under a fiat standard that all of these things need to improve. So pause there. I can get wordy with it, and I'll pause there.
So I want to ask in just a moment about maybe how things might change in order to once you purchase a business or become the majority owner of a business, how you kind of maybe would redirect some things so that it aligns more with that long-term quality approach that you've just described. But maybe even before that, it's like the precursor is, what does it look like for a business owner who might be listening to this right now, or someone listening to this, they have a friend who owns a business who might look to sell it. What would it look like, theoretically, for Township to partner with that business and to purchase the majority share of that business?
Perfect. So the two questions being, one, what does it look like to actually do the acquisition from a Township perspective? And then two, what are you actually doing in the business?
So I think what would you change, or do you want to buy businesses such that you don't need to change all that much along the way? Because, you know, you don't want to just totally change something that's maybe a foundational part of the community. I'm just kind of interested to know how you would navigate that to make sure that that long-term quality perspective is really a foundational element of the business, assuming that it's not already.
The way that Township works right now is as a long-term holding company, right now, we are what's called in the private equity world, we're what's called an independent sponsor. Hmm. So we are not raising a fund at the moment. That could change in the future, but at the present moment, we're not raising a fund to raise a bunch of money and then deploy to go buy businesses. There's a lot of SEC regulation and compliance headache. And in a lot of ways, these funds actually have an incentive misalignment, where the fund is making money off of the capital that they've actually raised. Whereas what we're doing is, as an independent sponsor, we are using our own capital from LPs, other Bitcoiners, and also the traditional TradFi world in order to acquire these businesses. So there are hundreds of billions of dollars of infrastructure set up for the traditional M&A activity that takes place to leverage into buying businesses, whether that's through the SBA or senior banks or mezzanine debt, that all exists. So the lion's share of our acquisition can come from a traditional institution. That can allow us to acquire the business, along with the equity that we're going to be putting in to do the acquisition. Now, from a legal structure, what that means is that we are creating an entity to basically own that. We're buying the assets or shares of the company, and we are now owners of this new entity that's been formed. And as operating partners or as operators, we are not acting as money managers. And so we are acting as business owners. So we're allowed to sell shares in this new business to the LPs, for example. And that gives us, that actually for us aligns the incentives, because we don't actually make money unless the business is making money. Whereas in a traditional private equity world, a lot of the times they can make money off of grow the business and then sell it for a multiple. And so they'll take a fat fee off of the assets that they have as their management fee that they've raised money from, and then they'll make money when they after they've sold the business in 5 years. And so the entire structure is this short-term mindset. Now, it's longer than most, 5 to 7 years, but it's by no means generational in principle. And so that for us aligns the incentives a lot better, where we actually don't make any money unless we are growing the equity of that business. Mm-hmm. And growing the equity of the business in a Bitcoin world means Bitcoin on that balance sheet. What it looks like when we actually get into it, before I jump into that, any questions that came to mind on your end?
I don't think so. I think it makes sense. Maybe the one thing is, this sounds a lot like, and I don't know kind of the background of Berkshire Hathaway, but is Berkshire Hathaway a long-term holding company as well, or is their structure a little bit different?
That's a great question. I would want to defer to my other partner, Roberto. He has studied Berkshire Hathaway for years, but in principle, yes. Yep. Berkshire Hathaway is their sole game is buy businesses that are going to last forever and grow the equity of that.
So this is a Berkshire Hathaway on a Bitcoin standard, essentially.
And in a way, yes. And we think that this is there is an opportunity for a lot of people to replicate this if they follow certain principles. So this is what we'll actually do when we get in with these businesses. The first is understanding that the business has been up and running for a while. It has its own operations. It has its customers. It has its team. We're not trying to go in there and disrupt everything. If anything, we want to have as minimal invasion as possible. But it's starting with the executive team, starting with the seller, starting with the leadership to create a longer-term vision, to understand who are the best customers. So at a high level, we're going to start by doing an evaluation, right? Let's understand your customers, your vendors, your team there. Then we want to start to create plans to what we call as the entry point principle, do less better. So again, back to that whole hurdle rate for Bitcoin, right? It's not about doing more. It's actually about doing less, but doing that less better. And so maybe this translates into, you know, serving less customers, but focusing only on the high quality customers and creating maybe turnkey solutions for them. It could be maybe building less products, but streamlining operations and therefore being able to serve more customers with a tighter kind of product set. Maybe it's just executing on fewer ideas, but instead rallying the troops to work on one singular opportunity that requires the entire team instead of having, you know, 10, 15 small teams doing things. So we're trying to see where in the business that might not be happening, right? Is the company serving too many low-value customers? Does the company have too many products that they're servicing? Is the team misaligned and doesn't understand what that vision is? And we're going to work with the executive team to actually put a plan in place to resolve those issues and understand that the new objective of the business is not growth. Growth, if it happens as a byproduct of the improvements, fantastic. But the principal requirement now is make this business last as long as possible. Because the game theory suggests that the longer the business lasts, the more Bitcoin you'll have. And so if we do think of this as a Bitcoin maximization function, right, you want to last as long as possible. And you'll be able to accumulate as much Bitcoin as you can that you can then reallocate into growing the team. Or if you don't even think about the business from the growth side and you're just like, hey, I have an opportunity to where I've got Bitcoin in the balance sheet. This is now I can now create maybe an employment stock option plan or an ESOP, or I can now create a retirement account. And we actually go back to where we were before the 70s, where you had companies like GE or Ford that had these pension plans where people worked at the company for decades. And the reason why is because in a lot of ways, those businesses were providing the talent, opportunity for growth, fulfillment in the work that they do, and a steady, stable source of wealth that they had. And they knew that they were going to be taken care of because the money wasn't broken yet. And so I think we're going to see a reversion back to that, at least from like the employment perspective. But that's, you know, I can keep going, but I'll pause there. And we are really trying to create plans around that at the highest levels of abstraction.
I think one of the things, especially if someone's listening right now who's thinking about selling their business in the future, one of their thoughts might be, well, where do I play into this? Like, do I sell and go away? I say that knowing that from your website, you say we don't want business owners that just sell and are totally out. But what does it look like for the original owner after they enter into a contract or into a relationship with you guys?
Great question. With us, we are looking for particularly owners or leadership team that want to continue to operate because at the very least, well, from our perspective, at the very least, it actually creates an operational risk if the owner wants to leave that makes it actually difficult for us to acquire the business. Right, you're introducing new operational risks. But as a seller, the way I would position it is our team has experience in sales and marketing in operations, in strategy, in industry research, in technology. I mean, one of our partners, Cameron, he owns an AI development company right now, and he's at the forefront of building products in that space. So we have skill sets that we utilize to bring in an outside perspective of the business that you have. And with the Bitcoin lens, how can we make this last as long as possible? And so with the seller themselves, the business owner, the leadership team, it's about giving them more time to do the most important things. And as a leader, the most important things that you can do are working on your business, not in your business. This is something that, you know, a lot of people hear all the time. It's like, oh, work on your business, work on your business. You know, don't work in your business. And it's so true, but it's so easy to get caught in that trap. And so the way we look at it is, how can we enable by bringing more resources or different ways of thinking to give the leadership team that has the expertise in their business, they have the expertise on the customers and the product lines and their industry as a whole, and give them the right incentives, give them the right space, and give them the right kind of structure and alignment together to create something that lasts as long as possible. And so if you're an individual that doesn't care about your team, just wants to make money and then, you know, go sit on the beach, it's like at a core value perspective, we're not gonna be in alignment, because that's probably gonna bleed down into other things that exist, your product or your customers or your team. They're gonna feel that same feeling. But if you do love your business, you love your customers, you love your product, but you're not quite sure like what you want to do next, or you know there's this growth that could be there, or you want to make it last and pass it down to the next generation or to your employees, that's exactly how we're thinking about this. Does that answer your question?
It does, indeed. So I feel like we have probably another interview in our future, once you guys are even further down the line, what you've learned, what's working well, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe for today, we can just go ahead and finish up here, though. Are there any final thoughts you have, anything you want to make sure the listeners leave with, either that you want to reiterate or that we haven't addressed yet in our conversation?
I'll say first, just thank you again for having me on here, Josh. I think that what you are doing is meaningful and impactful, and I hope that you continue to do it. I think that the information that's being disseminated needs to continue to be disseminated. And the last final thought is, as a business owner, it is much too easy to get caught up in the more. Mm-hmm. And it really is taking a step back and re-looking at things from the expectation that if you've got Bitcoin, you will be phenomenally set. And then asking yourself, if I know for a fact that I'm going to be taken care of, and I have that security of being financially stable, where if I don't change anything in my life, if I'm okay with it, and I'll be good for the next 20, 30 years, where do I want to spend my time? Where do I want to put that time and energy? And really ask yourself that question. What is important and valuable to you? And go spend your time doing that.
And where can people go to find out more about Township Ventures if what you've shared today has piqued people's interest?
You can go to township.ventures. So it's not townshipventures.com. It is township.ventures. And that's where you can find our website. And from there, you can get to the social media. I don't know them off the top of my head, but you can find me on LinkedIn as well at just my name, Lucas Bazemore. Love to connect with anybody that is curious and wants to learn more.
Great. Lucas, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks, Josh.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Business Bitcoinization Show. If you want to reach out to either me or Lucas, you can find those links down in the show notes. If you know of someone thinking about selling their business, let them know about Township Ventures. As always, keep building, keep growing, and until next time, keep living and leading well. Thanks to Pleb, to Polymath, and user 809-510-98 for streaming sats to the show on Fountain in the last week. If you would like to support the show, be sure to listen on Fountain and stream sats as you listen. Or if you'd like to, you could send a boost. And if you include a note with that boost, I'll be sure to read it on the show.